The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Thursday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this May 21st, 2026. Year of our Lord. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm Christian Griffin. He is Trip Upton here with you in the studio this afternoon. And man, we appreciate everybody for being here with us on this overcast, windy, sun trying to peek through the clouds Thursday afternoon. One thing that we know, the humidity is there and it's not really going anywhere. Welcome to the summer. We had an extended spring, but we are officially, I think it's safe to say, we welcome you into the summer. And so much for a drought, because Hoover Week is here. And why not have a little bit of weather? As you don't have it the first couple of days, why not have it now? It just makes everything that much better. I mean, Auburn played on time yesterday evening, and so what more could you ask for a 1 a.m. start coming up tomorrow night, or whatever the case may be? The intro lied to you here this afternoon. No Jacob Goins here in the studio this afternoon. In fact, no Jacob Goins for what, 9 days? I guess 7 in terms of the show, the program. He is, in fact, on air right now, just not in not in our studio. We have an empty seat. We taped a picture of Jacob's face. No, we didn't do that. To the seat. But we'll continue to give updates throughout the afternoon from the 7A AHSAA State Championship Series between Auburn and Hewitt Trustville going on right now. First pitch should be thrown, if it hasn't been thrown already, over on 963WLEE.com and that Radio Alabama app. So whenever we get to break, man, feel free to slide on over to the Auburn High Sports Network. Again, he is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. Happy Thursday, sir. Hope all is well in your world. Hopefully you caught up on some sleep after watching the Auburn game.
Yeah, happy Thursday. Happy Victory Thursday. And we'll get into
it's been a while since a Victory Thursday, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, because you didn't win in the midweeks during basketball, and you really didn't play a lot of midweeks on Wednesdays for baseball. So happy Victory Thursday. It's been a great day today. A little busy, but we're here ready to talk about the game last night. I didn't stay up too late, which was nice.
Yeah, it actually, again, started on time, so it wasn't a 1 a.m. bedtime or a 1 a.m. first pitch, which is relatively nice. And credit to the guys at Hoover that are in charge of making the decisions. Again, the game's getting moved up here this afternoon. Georgia and Mississippi State, rather, in battle right now. Home half of the seventh inning. The Dogs out in front of the Dogs. I'll let you choose. No, Georgia out in front of Mississippi State, 4-2 in the home half of the seventh inning. Alabama will play soon to follow, but almost building in that buffer day. And so Auburn, although winning yesterday, does not play tonight. They will take on Texas A&M tomorrow night in the nightcap, but that gives us a full day to break down a whole lot. It's going to be a heavy baseball conversation on the show here today as Auburn does beat LSU. We're going to recap the game. We're also going to recap the game within the game, talking about the player breakdowns, what Auburn did really well and what they did not do so well. We also have some audio that we're going to play throughout the show here this afternoon. We have a couple of statements on a lineup change and two wonderful guests joining us. Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network, who was on site on the call in Hoover last night to be able to get his thoughts on what he saw in game one of Auburn and LSU. Again, recapping a really, really good game against a desperate team, and that's something that I will continue to highlight throughout the day. I don't think that needs to go understated. It was a desperate LSU team that now will see their season come to a close, and I think that some props need to be given to this Auburn squad. We'll also be able to recap all of Hoover and talk about our favorite thing that we've had a lot of discussions on over the past couple of days. The automated balls and strikes, because everybody seems to love it until your team is the one that gets screwed over by it. And things got a little bit dramatic yesterday evening. I know we were sitting there talking back and forth about it, and we'll happily get our thoughts out with the ABS here this afternoon.
Yes, 100%. But if you want to give your thoughts about it, other than our two guests, phone lines are open. 334-321-1390.
Attaboy.
Oh, yeah. I've got it memorized at this point. I sit in here and listen to y'all say it other. So if you would like to call in and give your thoughts on it, obviously we'll have our guests, but around that, you'll be able to call in. No text box today as Jacob is in
Look at you.
Oxford. But if you just want to, like, text him, hi, I mean, wouldn't say no to that. It just confuses him a lot. Throw him off on air. But, again, yeah, the big game last night we've got to break down, and it got hairy there for a minute, but Auburn pulled it out behind some great pitching.
They did. Jake Marciano got the start after a short days of rest. We talked about what he was able to do a couple of weeks ago after 2 days short of rest. Last night, basically, again, throwing every week, he only had had one less day than he usually does. And I think that was the biggest reason why you didn't see Jake go into that seventh inning. But to be able to give you six in game one and the way that he was able to do it was really, really impressive to see. And Jake has had a couple of frustrating outings over the past couple of weeks. I think the one, weirdly enough, against Georgia that we broke down heavily, where, funny enough, he gave up two runs and it was two changeups that he wants back. But against a team like Georgia that you're seeing right now leading Mississippi State 4-2 in the first game this afternoon, I think it built confidence for Jake. And we have some audio that we're going to play from our friends over at the Auburn Sports Network with the Regions Bank postgame show. And here, Mr. Brad Law, who we will hear momentarily on the phone lines as well, but be able to break down what he saw from Jake and what Jake saw from this LSU squad. But the ability that he went six innings pitched, four hits, one run, one walk, and four Ks, he really let the defense work behind him as well. The defense did not commit an error, and my goodness, helped him out so many times. And I feel like that builds a whole lot of confidence that you're continuing to see. And how nice is it that you have a guy like that that can get the game started, get the weekend started the way that you wanted to against an LSU team?
Yeah, I mean, he's just been the guy this year. I mean, six innings pitched, only gave up four hits, one earned run, a walk, and four strikeouts. He played a great role in this one and kept an LSU team. We talked about it yesterday. When they're hot, they're hot. They can get on base, they can score runs, holding them to only one run total, but and that only coming off of Marciano. That just proves that this pitching staff, like, even with an offensive night that was up and down, that they didn't really take advantage of a poor LSU pitching staff, in my opinion, still was able to get it done, and that's because Marciano gave them the grace to be able to do that.
Two hits outside of Derek Curiel, who is their three-hole hitter, who is their center fielder, that will be drafted in the top 15, or the top 20, if not the top 15, in next year's MLB draft. And so a whole lot of hype on that side of things. But again, we got some audio from Brad Law, the Auburn Sports Network, and the Regions Bank postgame show, talking with Mr. Jake Marciano. And this is what he had to say about his outing and what he saw from the defense and what he liked from his game on the mound last night and the win that he picked up against the LSU Tigers.
From the stretch, the delivery. Bouncing ball too short. McCrane to Rembert for one. On to first. Double play. 6-4-3. Twin killing. Inning ending double play. Hit into by Milam. First, all right, Jake, congratulations on this one. Just tell me how this feels. You come out the winner in Auburn's first game in the SEC tournament.
Thank you. Yeah, no, it feels great being able to come out here, first game of the SEC tourney, and win it and give us a chance to move on.
Did it feel good from the start for you tonight? Everything that you were trying to work the corners against this team and up and down in the strike zone, did you feel good early?
Yeah, everything felt great for me. Obviously, you know, I'm a big command guy. I'm obviously not velo over pitch, but I just try to put that ball where I need to and let Chase and I just work.
What did it mean to you to get the ball in this tournament opener for this team? We saw you come back on 2 days short of rest a couple of weeks ago in conference play. I mean, you don't mind kind of taking the mantle and running with it for this team?
Yeah, no, I just want the ball. Whatever coach gives me, I take that opportunity and I run with it.
How did the ABS system and the challenges and the early strike zone that you saw tonight kind of figure into the way you pitch?
I really didn't let it affect me at all. If Chase wanted to challenge a pitch, I'll let him. But obviously, I just try to throw the ball where I need to and not really worry about it.
You were in such a groove there today. Once the team gets a couple of runs on the board, I mean, just kind of everybody's feeling pretty good at that point. They've got the confidence in you. You've earned that throughout this year. Talk about that a little, if you would.
Yeah, having that confidence really helps me just focus on my craft and focus on what I need to get done. Like what we talk about, every time we score a run, we need to shut down innings. So being able to put up a zero after we score is really the biggest key.
Nice job out there tonight. Appreciate the time, Jake. War Eagle.
Thank you. War Eagle.
That was Jake Marciano again after his win, going six complete innings, four hits, one run, only one walk and four strikeouts. And the number four in terms of the strikeout numbers, you feel like is relatively low for him. But again, it's just because of LSU's aggressiveness, and he was able to take advantage of that early on in counts. And when he got behind, he also took advantage of it. It's really, really impressive to see. And both announcers talked about it on the TV broadcast. And then I know that Andy and Brad did as well over on Wings 94. Three, just talking about the success that Marciano has and his ability to command the strike zone. He's not somebody, as we have seen all season long, he's not going to give you 97, 98, where you can afford to miss spots. You can afford to throw it middle. When you're sitting 89, 91, it's going to be much more of the command. It's going to be highs and lows and ins and outs. And I think that is such a unique spot of college baseball, and then just, I mean, baseball in general, because everything is velocity, everything is power. And so being able to implement a little bit of finesse into his game, I think that builds more and more confidence. And then you go to another guy who also has a little bit of finesse to his game, loves going to the slider, loves going to the fastball in backwards counts. He's somebody that pitches a little bit backwards, and it's somebody, weirdly enough, that even though it's the lefty on the mound, he throws better to right-handed hitters. And by no means is this anything drastic, but lefties, funny enough, hit him better. And I think it's because you have more confidence in that back foot, that backdoor slider, both of them, that you saw last night as Jackson Sanders comes out of the bullpen. And my goodness, we've talked about all four arms. Jackson Sanders gets it done yet again when Auburn has the lead, which we haven't even highlighted yet. The fact that Auburn gave Jake Marciano a little bit of run support, it wasn't anything crazy, but they gave him three runs, which more than not has been enough to win baseball games. Also have to credit the attendance, which we will hear in a minute as well. But Jackson Sanders comes out of the bullpen, and we can only talk so much about his selflessness and the journey that he has been on, but he has found a home in Auburn's bullpen this year. Three innings pitched, no hits, no runs, did have two walks, both of those in the ninth, and both of those a little bit hairy that would not have been walks a couple of weeks ago, but making his way into the SEC tournament. Jackson Sanders, two strikeouts in there as well, just absolutely closes the door for this Auburn squad.
Yeah, I mean, does not allow a hit during his three innings pitched. No runs given up in a game where it was a 1-1 ball game until the LSU shortstop basically tried to throw it at Brandon McCrane, who was kind of standing halfway between third and home, and a run was able to score, then followed up by the home run. But looking at him, like two strikeouts, he has been someone this year where you come into the year and you're thinking that you're going to be kind of what you said, you're going to be a starting pitcher, you're going to be our Saturday guy.
Mm-hmm.
And then Andres Alvarez plays, it looks like the best pitcher on the roster. Well, we have to have him in the rotation, and well, Petrovic's still really, really good. We need him to anchor that potential rubber match on day three, and Marciano looks great too, and we don't play four game series.
Yeah.
So Jackson, let's take a step back and use you in the bullpen as a long reliever, a guy that he's again pitched three innings last night and was able still threw a decent number of pitches, through 50 pitches,
mm-hmm,
to Marciano's 86. So it wasn't like it was you're coming in, you're going to face four batters and then go get just to get to the next arm in the
right
rotation. It's you're going to go play, basically have a mini start of your own. And I just think Jackson Sanders has just done such a good job at doing that and taking that role and embracing it. And that pitching synergy, because you might not have to play Marciano. You know, it's whatever pitcher on the weekend gets in trouble. It's, okay, Jackson, we trust you enough. Go and give us four innings that we can put in our closer, win the game.
Yeah, it's one of those things you've seen a little bit in the MLB, not as popular now, but you saw a little bit of it a couple of years ago about MLB teams using openers, almost using their closer in the first and or the second inning, and then getting a middle reliever to go the third and the fourth, and then using your starter to go the fourth through the ninth. That's almost a little bit of the unintentional design that Jackson Sanders brings. Instead, it's just starter going to another starter, yet you're not having to burn one of your regular starters. And yeah, you mentioned it, the selflessness of knowing that, man, Jackson, this is not because you've lost your starting spot by any means. We've just realized what you have done and what you are best at is getting outs and being able to really shut down innings. But we want it to be in key situations. We want you to be the guy. And funny enough, it's almost even more trust for some of these teams, because, or for this Auburn team, because, man, you're going to be the guy we go to when we need a win, and not necessarily one inning, because when Jackson Sanders steps onto the mound, whether it's the fifth inning, it could be the seventh inning, they're not expecting. This Auburn team is not expecting to use another arm. Even when things got a little bit hairy last night, there was not even another arm up and working, because it's Jackson Sanders' game. He's given you that opportunity. He's proven to be able to handle it, and he continues to show up again. Auburn wins at 3-1 over LSU.
Yeah, I mean, he just plays so well, and is, again, it's, if you could ask Butch Thompson his ideal scenario, that it's that Jackson Sanders has the weekend off because they're so winning so by so much, and maybe you play him on a Saturday just to keep his arm warm after you've clinched the series.
Sure.
But he has just been a guy where even if your starter is in a pickle, in a bad situation, we got Jackson Sanders in the bullpen. I'm not worried about, well, man, like, I don't know. You know, you're not getting someone that's going to have like a 7 ERA in 2 appearances. It's a guy that has seen batters and knows, has a good rapport with this team, and can go out there and shove.
It's that, and it's being able to be comfortable in your own skin, knowing the opportunity. As you mentioned, this isn't somebody that's randomly just, okay, let's throw you in this situation and see if it works, man. This is his comfort zone, and he continues to show why. It was scoreless after the third inning. LSU gets a sacrifice fly in the top half of the fourth. And we talk about response innings. What about response just ABs? The very next batter in the home half of the fourth inning was Chase Frelick. He led off with a solo shot. Auburn scores one in each of the fourth, the fifth, and the sixth inning. You mentioned the crazy play that ended up being a really nice play by the second baseman for LSU, realizing you're not going to have a play at first on the slow chopper, trying to flick it back to third to get McCrane caught in a rundown, but threw it wide of the third baseman. McCrane was able to come around and score. That was on the Rembert hit. But we mentioned the Frelick solo bomb, and then the Eric Guevara solo bomb. Those were the two big flies that ultimately determined this contest. And how nice is it to see Eric Guevara hit another bomb inside the Hoover Met? And I believe it was a record for the SEC hang time.
That was what I was legitimately going to say. I saw the post-game show on SEC Network talking about that. That was the longest hanging pitch and like hit of the season.
I believe, 6 seconds it hung up in the air, to where it's like, okay, it's going to come down eventually. No, it's going to keep on carrying. It's going to keep on carrying. And you saw the left fielder do that as well. Frelick with a solo bomb. Eric Guevara with a solo bomb. And before we take a break, we get to hear from Eric Guevara again from the Regions Bank post-game show, our friends over at the Auburn Sports Network. This is what Eric Guevara had to say about his swing and about the team's win over LSU last night.
The zero after we score is really the biggest key.
Nice job out there tonight. Appreciate the time, Jake. War Eagle.
Thank you. War Eagle.
Here's the 3-2. Swing and a fly ball to left. Stanfield is back. He's at the track. He's at the wall. That's long gone. Eric Guevara with a dozen homers this year. 12th for Eric. And Auburn leads 3-1. Now we'll talk to Eric Guevara. Big home run to push the Auburn lead to 3-1. Second home run in this ballpark this year. Eric, got to feel pretty good after winning the first game in the tournament.
Yeah, it's an awesome feeling, man. The guys battled. Jake did he did his job. Jackson came in and did his job. And but just put enough runs for them to keep us in the lead.
So it was an LSU team that was fighting for their season. Their season was on the line here tonight, and they were throwing maybe the best available arm that they had. Talk about what you guys were trying to do against their starter tonight.
Yeah, we were just gonna take away the fastball early in the game. He was mixing really good, his splitter and his slider, and then we just had to, you know, back down a little bit from the fastball and be ready to hit that pitch, because he was gonna throw it. He's gonna throw the cutter. He's gonna throw the splitter, and we just had to be ready for him, put pitches in him, and get into the bullpen.
Force them into making a mistake to grab the lead, and then you come up there with the 2-1 lead. What were you looking for? What'd you get?
Yeah, both of my first two at bats, I've been getting all soft pitches, so I knew I got to two strikes. I knew they were gonna want to put me away with some soft, and I was just ready for it, and I was able to follow up a couple pitches, and then I got one that I was able to drive.
And those foul balls were important. You worked that count full. You kind of worked into – you limited what he was able to throw in that spot a little bit.
Yeah, 100%. I knew that his go-to pitch when, you know, in any, like, count that he'd want to get out of, it's the changeup, and I was just ready to be all over it.
Now, talk about playing defense behind Jake and Jackson and watching them do their thing on the mound tonight.
Man, they're so good. You know, we're so excited to have them here, and we're so excited when they're on the mound. They do an awesome job just filling up the strike zone and, you know, getting ahead in counts and just doing their thing. And, man, they're awesome to play behind.
Huge crowd tonight. This is the fourth largest crowd in SEC tournament history for this game, Auburn and LSU. Did you hear the Auburn fans tonight?
Man, we heard you guys. It was awesome. Thank you. Thank you for being here, and it means the world to us.
We'll let you get back. Congrats on this one. War Eagle.
War Eagle.
We talk about being able to hear the Auburn faithful, 14,461 last night, the fourth largest attendance in Hoover and the largest on a Wednesday night. And so I would stand to agree with Eric Guevara that he, as well as the entire Tigers, felt the Auburn family right there. Man, you could hear everybody in between innings, especially when things were getting a little dicey down the stretch, being able to cheer on your Tigers to a 3-1 win last night. So we'll take our first break, come back, and we get to hear a little bit from Coach Butch Thompson, because a big-time lineup change that you feel like goes a little bit by the wayside, but it ended up paying big-time dividends last night. What could it mean for the future of this team, and how it's kind of following suit with what all of baseball analytics are telling everybody? We're back right after this here on the Thursday edition of On the Line.
Hey, this is your resident Super Bowl champ, Chris Candy, from Unsportsmanlike, and you're listening to On the Line with Jacob Goins on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7.
From revolution to rockets, from dusty frontiers to city skylines, these are the moments that shaped America. This is the American Minute, presented by Bucks Island. Christmas night, 1776. The American Revolution was nearly lost. General George Washington and his ragged Continental Army faced freezing winds along the Delaware River. Many soldiers had no boots. Morale was collapsing. But Washington had one bold idea. Cross the river. Surprise the Hessian troops in Trenton. In darkness and snow, the army pushed boats through ice. By morning, they attacked. The victory was small in numbers, but enormous in spirit. The Revolution lived to fight another day. One more moment that shaped the country we call home. The American Minute is presented by Bucks Island, family-owned and operated, serving boaters since 1948. Online at bucksisland.com.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
We are back here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. Brief updates for you. Georgia leading Mississippi State 4-2 in the home half of the seventh inning. Bases are loaded with two outs and an ABS challenge actually happening right now. We'll see if Georgia wins it. Mississippi State's arguing that it was well too late, and there's a little bit of gray area on that side of things, but we'll get you that score update if anything changes. Again, Georgia out in front 7-2 in the home seventh in that one. The Tigers and the Huskies over at Chocolaco Park in Oxford, Alabama, tied at zero in the home half of the second inning. Again, the 7A state championship going on there. But talking Auburn and LSU from last night in the Hoover Met, Auburn wins it 3-1. And we just broke down the pitching matchup, the job done by Marciano and Jackson Sanders. And going to break, played the audio of Eric Guevara and his comments from his solo blast, and it was something that I noticed a little bit when I looked at the graphic, and more just thought, "Huh, okay, changing it up a little bit. I don't mind it at all. In fact, I kind of like what we saw from this. And after the game, again, major credit to Mr. Brad Law, who you're going to hear from here in just a few moments as well. But in the Regions Bank postgame show, asked Butch Thompson about a lineup change. And it was moving Chris Rembert from anywhere from fourth to fifth to batting leadoff. And this is what Butch Thompson had to say in terms of that strategy as well as the night as a whole.
Milam from second and Harden from first will be off with the pitch. Full count now to Pearson. Two outs, top of the ninth. Jackson Sanders stretches and pitches. Ground ball back to the shortstop. McCrane charges, fields, throws, and Auburn wins. Sanders gets the save. The win to Jake Marciano. And Auburn moves on to the quarterfinals of the SEC tournament. 6-3 on the putout. Auburn wins. Tigers 3, LSU 1.
Andy, thank you very much. Coach, just a tremendous pitching effort from your guys tonight, and you're moving on here in Hoover.
Yeah, Marciano, day short, did great. And it's been Marciano to Sanders or anybody to Sanders. It's been that kind of run for Jackson. And ABS showed up for him a little bit. It feels like these last 6 weeks we could have got off that field a little bit sooner, but the ABS drug it out, a couple more hitters. A team's fighting like crazy. I'll throw some decent pitching that way too. I mean, we knew Evans was the best available starter left for these guys, and then Cowan, we've seen him in the past. That's national championship type 1-2 punch. So a little slow. Frelick's home run was big. Guevara, that third run was big, especially when you get, you know, the tying run to first base there in the ninth. So did enough. Still a couple of situations. We got two on one time. I think it was the fifth inning, and we couldn't get a bunt down against maybe our best bunter. Little things like that. So they kept it close, kept competing. But, you know, the defense played great. I don't think we had an error, but we turned a double play against Milam at a crucial moment. Brandon McCrane made the last out of the ball game. Marciano had a good fielding play there early and just handled everything. Pretty buttoned up, and wish we could have kept fighting, and we want to keep growing offensively this week, as long as we get to stick around. So keep growing, but the pitching was pretty good tonight.
Leadoff has been such a key throughout this year, and whether it was the home run by Frelick that led off an inning, or even Chris Rembert back in the leadoff spot tonight, and he hits the ball that leads to that go-ahead run, getting a guy on base to start the inning. You cash that in, too, there in the fifth.
Yeah, I felt like Chris has been coming for the last couple of weeks with his swing ever since, I think, the home run at Mississippi State on game three. I just feel like his at-bats are getting better and better. And once you lead off one time, you're not guaranteed to lead off again. It just keeps rolling around. So I think I really wanted to see before we get to regional play next week, if we get a fifth at-bat. If that fifth at-bat rolls around, what's the 1-2-3 guys you'd want to see have it? So we really thought, you know, we really wanted to look at Rembert and Frelick, especially Bingaman and Guevara in those four spots there up top. So could get a little bit more length and distance from the bottom. Mace McCrane had pretty good at-bats down there. He was in the seven hole tonight and still in there. So we thought we'd play a little more offense and do some things, but we wasn't able to generate it, and that's why you saw Bristol and Blue in there. So a little bit of different complexion, but it really started with our first four spots, thinking about, you know, down the road and those guys getting settled, and who do you want to go down with if you're in the ninth inning, just like we were? Who would you want walking to the plate for that fifth at bat? And I don't think we want to miss any guys before those four are lined up.
All right, the rain starts to fall a little bit harder. We'll let you go. Continue to enjoy this one. Can't wait to watch you Friday. War Eagle.
War Eagle.
Butch Thompson in his Tigers win over the other Tigers. Auburn wins it 3-1 over LSU last night. And music's kicking us out of here. We'll head to break. But we will be able to dive into this a little bit more, and I want to be able to dive into it a little bit more. We'll do so with Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network. He joins us on the phone lines, as he does every single Thursday at 2:30, to talk about the lineup change, talk about what he saw from the night as a whole. And we'll be able to talk all about what is still upcoming for this Auburn Tiger team. Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network, he joins us coming up next.
You're 30 minutes into On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Now back to the studio with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
30 minutes into the Thursday edition of On the Line. He is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. We appreciate everybody for being here with us. A look into Chocolaco Park in Oxford, Alabama. The Tigers and the Huskies tied at zero in the top half of the third inning in the 7A state championship. And a little bit of an update, Georgia also brought one across in the home seventh. But we flip our calendar back to last night, and we welcome in a guy who joins us every single Thursday at 2:30, Brad Laud of the Auburn Sports Network. Brad, your voice has been very popular here on the show today. Just got done playing some audio from the region's post-game show, talking with Marciano, talking with Eric Guevara, Butch Thompson. What is your thoughts on what was a fantastic night and against a team in LSU that was desperate for a win? And I feel like that cannot be stated enough.
Yeah, you're right. They were. I mean, they weren't the most. I say they're not most talented. They had a lot of talent. They just didn't have a good year.
Right.
And so they were appropriately seeded 14th. And but that extra piece is that they were playing for their postseason life. The only chance they had was to win the SEC tournament. So, you know, and you could see all the way down to the very end, they're fighting and scratching for every last second and maybe hoping the game went into a weather delay and they could fight back against somebody other than Jackson Sanders. I thought that Jake and Jackson were just as dialed in as they've been all year. They were fantastic. Marciano, maybe his best outing in a month or 6 weeks, really did a good job of limiting LSU. And even, you know, a couple of two-out hits early and then got out of the inning. They didn't let hits compound in the game. And as a result, only give up one run and offense gets enough, and now you're moving on.
Scratching, clawing, fighting, head tapping, doing everything you can to try and stay alive in that game. We'll get your thoughts on that side of things here in just a moment. But you mentioned it. Jake Marciano gets six innings on a day less of rest. And so 86 pitches, being able to get six complete from him, four hits, only one earned and four strikeouts as well. And then Jackson Sanders comes in and just absolutely closes the door. We talked about it earlier and how the best opportunity for Butch Thompson would be Jackson Sanders not having to throw at all, but a very close 1B would be a night like this where you get an A-plus night from your guy Jake Marciano, and then Jackson Sanders finding a very comfortable role in that bullpen. Yeah. Whenever this team has the lead, it's okay. We're not bringing anybody else out of the pen. This is your game. Yeah. Go and win it for us.
Yeah, and you're really still full bore for now because you've got today off.
Right, yeah.
For tomorrow against Texas A&M, you're set up with Andreas Alvarez and maybe an L.J. Cormier or a Hetzler if you need him. And then if you don't use Hetzler, if you're still playing on Saturday and you haven't used Hetzler yet, now you go Petrovic Hetzler, which is what they've done now for a few weeks in a row. And then figure it out Sunday, and Jackson Sanders might be able to come back and give you an inning or two on Sunday. You're really set up about as well as you could be for this week and for regionals next week, because Marciano, while he was on a day less rest this week, now is going to, you know, next week with regionals, you lock back into Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and hopefully it's just those 3 days. And now Jake could go with two extra days of rest from what he did this week and kind of get back on that normal Friday, Saturday, Sunday schedule. So, yeah, you're in a good spot for this weekend and also in a good spot for next weekend.
We're talking with Brad Law, the Auburn Sports Network, who's in Hoover with the Auburn Tigers as they try and compete in the SEC tournament. I wanted to talk to you, Brad, about the defense. It seemed, you know, it was really good to see Auburn not being the team to make the error that changes the game, with LSU having the second baseman basically try to play kickball and hit Brandon McCrane with the ball between third and home, which ended up being the go-ahead run late in that one. Talk to me about the defense and how the preparation for this game impacted that, and they were ready to go.
Yeah, I think you've seen pretty steady defenders all year. I mean, how many games in a row now have we seen Guevara at third, McCrane at short, Rembert at second, and Bingaman at first? That's been your primary infield for most of the year since Brandon, you know, started playing short when Chris Rembert came back from his injury, and then Brandon moved over to short from second. And, you know, they experimented with Brandon at third and Guevara at short. And, you know, Eric's just better at third, and Brandon's been better at short. Those guys have been able to play that position and do it really at a high level all year long. So that's the A piece of it. The B piece of it is this wasn't their first game in Hoover. Playing that game against Samford at the Hoover Met has some advantages. Eric Guevara loves hitting in his ballpark, as evidence now. Two games here, two home runs this year. Defensively, there are advantages as well. You get used to the way the ball bounces. You kind of know where you need to charge and when you need to play back. And another very clean – they emphasize defense, and another clean defensive game last night. Critical when runs are at a premium.
Flipping back to the lineup side of things, and giving major applause to you with asking Coach Butch Thompson the question that I'm about to talk about with you, but making the lineup change and how it's something that kind of goes by the wayside, not too many people notice it, but moving Chris Rembert up to the leadoff spot and asking Coach Thompson about that. Well, if we make our way through the lineup four times, and next thing you know, we need two or three guys to have five at bats, who do you want to be those guys? Obviously, Chris Rembert is in that conversation, and ultimately ended up being a part of that play, that error that Tripp mentioned that came around and scored Brandon McCrane. But talk about what you've seen from this lineup change, again, only one night, but what it could mean for the Auburn Tigers moving forward, just getting a little bit more production and one of your best bats at the top of your lineup.
Yeah, I appreciated the way he answered the question, because it wasn't to try to tinker and fix something that was broken.
Sure.
Because Mason McCrane's been, you know, a 320 or 330 hitter since he moved into the leadoff role. But, you know, when you get into the postseason, you don't want to kind of kickstart new things when you get to regional play. So this was kind of a trial balloon. Who do you think are your absolute most consistent hitters? Those are the guys that you want to optimize and maximize the number of at-bats that they have. And those four at the top of the lineup, Rembert and Frelick, and that's why they're one and two. Maybe the most consistent hitters that you have. Haven't had the big valleys at any point this year. So Rembert, Frelick, Guevara, Bingaman, just like you said, and just like Butch said last night, it's, you know, when you go through the lineup three to four times, when you get that extra trip through, whether it's four times or five times or whatever, those are the guys that you trust the most. Not because other guys aren't doing it. Again, Mason's been good in the leadoff spot, but, you know, when you get to the later end of the ball game, those are the, you know, veteran plus Bingaman, who's been the leader in batting average and RBIs in league play since the first weekend of conference play. Mm-hmm. You know, those are the most consistent bats, so you want them to have the number of at-bats.
Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network taking the time to join us from Hoover, Alabama, after being on the call last night over on Wings 94.3. And not sure if we've gotten your thoughts on this as a whole, and not sure if they're even strong beliefs on your end, but even before the SEC decided to bring the ABS into the Hoover tournament, were you a fan of it at all, or are you a little bit more of the old school baseball being baseball, you need that human aspect?
No, I like it in Major League Baseball.
Okay.
I haven't liked it at all so far in the SEC tournament. And not just because Auburn didn't win a challenge last night and LSU seemingly won all of them. I just think that when you watch it in the major leagues, it is far more accurate to what the strike zone is than what we've seen through a couple of days at the SEC tournament.
I agree.
There are balls being called strikes that are too low. They're not strikes. They're just not. And, again, you saw people all over social media saying this Tuesday before Auburn ever played. It's not an Auburn thing. This is just they're not strikes. And it forces umpires to change the way they call, because they're used to calling actual strikes. And we saw it last night with the home plate umpire.
Yep.
After LSU was successful two times on balls that were shin level, the home plate umpire had to start calling that a strike.
Yeah, because he got stood up and he was wrong twice and had to make it to where he was not going to continue to be wrong, and then neither team knew the bottom of the zone and neither team wanted to waste a challenge.
And I know what you're saying and I agree with it, but I'm going to use semantics to drive the point home.
Sure.
He wasn't wrong. He was right. Those were balls. But the LSU catcher, to his credit, knew the way the ABS system worked, knew what was going to be called a strike, and knew that if he challenged it, he would get the strike call. And so, yes, you're exactly right. From that point on, the umpire had to, even though he knew it wasn't a strike, he had to call it a strike. There were a dozen pitches like that in the game.
Well,
and so, yeah, if that's the strike zone, A, you have to, it's going to be the strike zone then for everybody, and you have to adjust to it.
Right.
So that's first and foremost. Go win anyway because of that. The ABS strike zone ain't going to lose anybody a game because everybody knows it now, and you have to adjust to it. But if that's the strike zone, I don't like it because it's not a strike, you know?
Right, and I think that I'd be really interested to hear from your perspective being in Hoover, or where everyone is right now, having to play a tournament with this, is that what's, you know, outside of just the Auburn perspective of what other, you know, fan bases and coaching staffs are thinking about this, especially if it's, well, if this is a trial run, could this be as permanent as early as next year? Like, what's the kind of general consensus around Hoover right now, in your opinion?
Yeah, Coach Thompson said it last night with just no filter. He said, I'm out on ABS. I'm out on it. I don't. And it's got to be, I mean, how do you, I don't know how you watch it and have any other outcome. Like,
right.
It needs to be tweaked.
Yeah.
So it's just like the second base, the extra base, the green base.
Right.
Like, that's a trial. It worked. There are clear advantages. Clearly it benefits the game and everybody playing the game, and there's no downside to it. So great. That continues in its form. With this, I think we eventually will get to it, but it's like most things. You just have to tweak it. You just have to tweak it and figure out where to fix it. And truly, you can't do that from day one to day two in Hoover.
Sure.
Everybody who watched it, all right, to a man behind closed doors would tell you, yeah, nope, that won't work in its current form. They knew it after game one Tuesday. But you can't change it on the fly like that. You have to, like, you just can't. So they'll tweak it going forward and maybe have another trial and error period before it's implemented. I mean, it's coming. It's going to be in the game.
Oh, yeah.
It just was very clear they have to tweak it.
Very well said, and I think the biggest one was the Curiel ball four that he challenged, that ABS said was like 4.5 inches outside the zone when it was a called strike and looked like a pretty good pitch from Sanders. Yeah. That would have ended the ball game. But again, well said by Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network here, joining us on the phone lines as he does every single Thursday at 2:30. And before we let you go, I know you are very happy that weather stayed away long enough to get Auburn to play on time. Auburn set to play in the night game tomorrow night, taking on Texas A&M. What do you want to see from this Auburn squad? And then how do you expect Texas A&M to try and counteract again after their best arms got hit relatively hard in their own ballpark by the Auburn Tigers earlier in the regular season?
Yeah, it's interesting. That series, when you look back on it, especially the way A&M finished with the series win over Mississippi State, 2 one-run games and just an absolute dominant performance by Auburn to open the series. So Auburn's going to go with Alvarez. They're going to go with Darden tomorrow night, and a game where both teams feel like they're really in safe hosting position. A&M, I think, maybe feels like it has some work to do to be a national seed, but there's plenty on the line. Plenty on the line. I would expect, you know, Auburn's bats to be a little better even than they were last night. Auburn has this year tended to be better the later a weekend has gone offensively. And so I think that's a good thing. And love Andreas Alvarez going on a Friday on the same schedule that he was a week ago and coming off a rough outing against Georgia. There's nobody who wants to bounce back more or more prominently than Dre. So I'm looking forward to seeing that tomorrow night.
You love seeing Andreas Alvarez take the mound. We love having you on our show, and we appreciate your time as well. I know this is a bit of a, not necessarily a waiting game now that you have a little bit of an off day, but still a very, very busy time getting your full dose of college baseball before the true postseason gets underway. Brad, we appreciate your time as always. Plug everything that you have over on Wings 94.3. Tell everybody where they need to go to keep up with all of your work and everything with the Auburn Sports Network as we work our way throughout Hoover this weekend.
Sure, we're going to go on the air at 6:15 tomorrow night, again, weather permitting, assuming no changes to the schedule. 6:15, Auburn plays the second game of the day tomorrow. The first game starts at 3. So, you know, we're thinking around 6:30 we're going to get underway tomorrow night. But just tune in to Wings 94.3 starting at 6:15 tomorrow, And we'll have all the action for you and set the stage for the rest of the weekend.
Well, we appreciate your time as always. Good luck on the call. Hopefully bring back a couple more wins so that way there's no site that can say that Auburn still needs work to do, because nobody on this side of things thinks that Auburn has to do anything else. We appreciate your time. We look forward to talking to you again next week.
Yeah, happy to do it, guys. War Eagle.
War Eagle. Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network here with us on the phone lines, joining us as he does every single Thursday at 2:30. We'll take a break. We'll come back, wrap up hour number one with some final Hoover recap to date updates, and also, again, dive a little bit more into the Butch Thompson lineup change, because I think it is a fascinating topic, and I want to be able to talk about that a little bit more. We'll do so when we come back and wrap up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7.
This is Evan Cohen from Unsportsmanlike, and you're listening to On the Line with Jacob Goins on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. He's Tripp Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. We appreciate you for being here with us. Also appreciate Brad Law for joining us on the phone lines, giving us his insight, his boots on the ground analysis. Again, there's nobody that's more passionate, nobody more knowledgeable, and we appreciate him for spending the time to join us every single week here on the show, and even more so in a very, very busy tournament over in Hoover. Thankfully, again, the night off, if you will, for the Auburn Tigers. I'm sure that he won't necessarily feel that night off, but we will, because we won't know what to do. Only two games, Mississippi State and Georgia, going on right now. Georgia added one in the home half of the seventh. We're in the top half of the ninth. State leads off with a solo home run, two outs, and then a two-out single.
Yeah, hey, the tying run at the plate right now, imagine.
No way it happens, right?
Imagine.
Bringing in a senior who has five homers on the year, hitting .351, a pinch hitter. Florida and Alabama will go on right after. And again, keep up with the Auburn Sports Network, as they will have updates for you all throughout tonight and into tomorrow morning on whether or not these games will be moved up as well.
Spin Zone. Doesn't Auburn kind of want Georgia to win so that Mississippi State doesn't have a path to jumping Auburn in the seed line?
Huh. I guess, yeah, you wouldn't necessarily complain, but
yeah.
I guess if that was the case, then it would be the RPI.
I mean, selfishly, you know, I guess Auburn also did beat Mississippi State, so maybe it would also give Auburn a bump up in terms
that's
of
what
schedule.
You're so far down the season to where I don't know if that even truly matters, as long as Auburn handles
business. I'm used to the March Madness.
Sure.
Discussions in terms of seeding and stuff, so that makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, making it to where, yeah, it's the imperfect college basketball. This team beat this team, this team beat this team, this team beat team.
The wheel of suck, basically.
Yeah, whatever it is, and it's like, okay, well, indirectly, that's the Central Florida way of this team beat this team, so technically they won the national championship. Ground ball hit to short, they will flip it to second. Georgia wins it 5-3 in game one here this afternoon. But while we do have just a minute or two before the music kicks us out of here, did want to spend, I guess, 30 seconds or so on the lineup change in Hoover. And it's something that we talked about off air, and how I think it's such a big-time topic of conversation on moving Rembert into the leadoff spot because of, man, when you get to the fourth time or the fifth time through the lineup, you want those guys to have that much more of a percentage to have an at-bat because of your consistency, because of what they have been able to do. And it lines up perfectly with the analytics of what, man, the MLB is doing. Guys like Ronald Acuna, guys like Kyle Schwarber, who is hitting more second than leadoff now, Ketel Marte, Gunnar Henderson. I mean, all of those guys have spent a lot of time leading off, and those are the guys 10, 15 years ago were batting third, fourth, and fifth. But now it's all about getting ABs. It's the guys that you want up in the clutch situations.
Yeah, it's not about getting just the fast guy on and then you're going to have three opportunities to get him in.
Right.
It is how can I maximize the long ball? How can I maximize runs? And having those guys early in the lineup are going to do that.
No score between the Tigers and the Huskies in the 7A state championship. While we're in break, flip over 96.3 W Lee. Go listen to our buddies Jack Hudden and Jacob Goins on the call for that one. We're back with hour number two, talking ABS, talking traditional regional productions, and Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast. All of that coming up in hour number two.
The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Thursday, everybody. Hope you are doing well as we get underway here in hour number two on the Thursday edition of On the Line. We appreciate everybody for being here with us. No Jacob Goins here in the studio, actually on air right now, home half of the third inning in game one between the Tigers of Auburn and the Huskies of Hewitt-Trussville. We'll continue to give updates on that side of things, but Trip Upton and Christian Griffin here with you in the studio, taking you through the next couple of days here on ESPN 106.7, and excited to do so. So much going on in the Auburn world. Talking season is here upon us, but a whole lot of baseball, and that was what a lot of our number one consisted of, as Auburn beats LSU 3-1 in their first game in Hoover, and did so methodically once again on the mounds. For the 31st time this season, Auburn allowed less than three runs to an opponent. That is absolutely crazy to think about, which goes to show, even when the offense doesn't necessarily have their A-plus night, which they did not last night. Again, a lot of that credit goes to LSU and the desperation of fighting for your season, because when you step between the lines, nobody cares, and they don't think about their record. They don't think about what they want to do. They just know that they want to keep playing baseball at one of the best places on earth to do so, in the Hoover Mat in Hoover, Alabama. Georgia takes game one over Mississippi State this afternoon. Alabama and Florida about to get going here as well. We had audio from Jake Marciano, from Eric Guevara, from Coach Butch Thompson in hour number one. We also talked about the lineup change that was made and how it's very, very following the suit of what analytics is now referring to and almost telling Major League Baseball teams to do. Auburn followed suit with that and ended up paying off last night. It's indirectly with the error, but it still paid off with Auburn's 3-1 win. We also got Brad Law on the phone lines from the Auburn Sports Network to get his in-depth analysis from being on boots on the ground, on the call for the game, what he saw from that desperate LSU team, from Marciano, from Jackson Sanders, from the solo home runs, and his thoughts on the ABS, the frustrations, not even in terms of Auburn not getting a single call and LSU getting just about every single one of them, but just overall in general. And man, we're going to dive into a lot of that conversation here to start hour number two. But if you missed any of hour number one, again, you can check it out in our podcast center at ESPNAU.com.
And in hour number two, we talked to Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC. I'm sure he's got some thoughts on not only what's going on in Hoover, but what's going on in Baton Rouge with Will Wade, Lane Kiffin, Ed Ogeron. I mean, it's stuff's happening down south in the Bayou. We're going to also look ahead for Auburn, not only a little bit with Texas A&M, the Aggies and the Tigers do battle tomorrow night. Also looking at some updated regional projections, kind of just as not a ton has changed, but a couple of the lower, you know, 2, 3, 4 seeds have moved around. So Auburn, that will change who they play. But we start the hour with an important discussion that we've been kind of previewing and referencing all day, and Christian and I wanted to do a deep dive on this. ABS. We are 2 days in. You've heard their, you know, you've heard the opinions, what our opinions before the game last night and after. Slightly different with Auburn being on the not only complete losing end of, but ABS made a palpable difference in the game and almost changed the result, Christian.
Yeah, it did. Again, we appreciate everybody for being here with us. If you want to be a part of the conversation for the first 30 minutes here in hour number two, the phone lines are open at 334-321-1390. If you agree with any of our takes, if you disagree, if you are a big-time fan of ABS, or if maybe your opinion has changed after watching your team play and them realize and them reap the not only the benefits or the lack thereof, but reap the bottom barrel of, my goodness, Auburn going 0-for in terms of challenges going in there. Favor. And so, did last night change your opinion on anything? Give us a call at 334-321-1390, because everybody loves the automated balls and strikes until your team is the one that gets screwed over. And so, again, a really fun hour number two conversation that we're going to have before we get with Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC content, or Locked On SEC podcast, that is. But just crazy to think that LSU had more successful ABS challenges with six than hits with four. And I feel like that is a perfect segue into a very, very fun, very, I'm trying to think of the right word, a very polarizing start to hour number two.
Yeah, but to start the hour, we're going to head to the phone lines with John from Auburn. John, buddy, you are on the line.
Hey, guys, War Eagle, happy whatever day this is.
Thursday. Yeah, happy
Victory Thursday.
Victory Thursday, right?
Victory Thursday. You know, I think college baseball already has a pace of play problem. And I just, you know, there are so many other things we can do to help pace the play. And I felt like this was the wrong tournament to reintroduce or to introduce ABS in, because you're tight on all these game windows anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't exactly get logistically why this was the week you just had to go back out and do something.
It's funny you say that, because when we first talked about this and they made the announcement of it making its way to the SEC tournament, I thought the exact same thing. Of, I'm all for if you want to do it for a full year, and even if that comes with some frustrations, but picking a in-season tournament, essentially, and one that has so much meaning in terms of the teams making it to the postseason, maybe not necessarily on the spots or anything like that, but picking a very important time to do so and try and just guinea pig your way, and I think through a day and a half, you've already felt the frustrations.
Agreed. Hey, real quick, because somebody's in Oxford today,
yeah.
Let me get this out about the Braves. So the Braves are 4-16. And if you think about it, that's a .680 winning percentage. You can't tell me that 680 the Fan has not had better promotional
Holy
opportunities
cow.
Than they do now.
That's fantastic work right there. If not, I think you need to reach out to him, John.
That's
take
journalism.
Royalty on that side of things, at least for the next couple of hours until they play again here tonight.
Exactly. And I'm back to thinking Dom Smith needs a statue.
Yeah, I agree with you. And the Braves, when they dropped game one to that just electric Miami Marlin offense, we talked about it off air that next day. We're like, guys, we can't lose a division series. And then the way they've responded the past couple nights has just been very good to see, especially, I'm sure you agree as well, winning 8-4 and 9-1, and they got a game tonight that they're hoping to do the same.
John, I heard that you are on call for catcher if needed.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think we'll bring back Brian McCann if that's right.
We may need to.
Does Kurt Suzuki want to come over from Los Angeles and managing and come get behind the dish?
Get Darno back. I mean, do something here. Okay, let me get out of here on a Braves question.
Sure.
Since we tell it like it is and hold nothing back, do the Braves get one of these top-flight left fielders, a Buxton, a Trout, somebody like that before the deadline?
Ooh. We appreciate your call, John. I appreciate you for being a loyal listener, being a relatively caller as well. And why not? Why not have a better question when Jacob's not in here to ask a couple of Braves questions?
I know.
I will say I will not dive into any of the Mike Trout conversation, because he has talked all about wanting to be in Anaheim and bring this team. Funny enough, he can't even say a World Series. He just said a playoff win. and I don't even know if that's going to happen. But that you feel like that's on the conversation. That's at the very top of the MLB clicks every single year, just because, oh, Mike Trout's having a great year. He might get traded. He's probably going to get traded. Who is he going to go to? I don't know if I'm going to fall into any of that. Byron Buxton, I feel like, is a little bit of a different story. A Georgia kid, if he can get back to the home state, that would be very, very exciting. Another top
of the order bat, possibly a leadoff spot if you want to move Acuna down. I don't know if you necessarily want to play that game, but I would love for them to be in at least some sort of conversation with that, and then maybe another closer or one of those relievers in there as well.
Yeah, I think that looking at just what Alex Anthopoulos has done as the general manager for the Braves, not a aggressive general manager by any means. The only year you really look at is the desperation year where they won the World Series, which, you know, I think that's more of an outlier because of what the pressures that were mounting at that point. And now that he had the World Series, it bought him a couple years of grace, years that maybe I would slightly disagree that he deserved. But I think that looking at this roster, I think that they are fine rolling with what they have. I mean, left field is a position of need. I don't disagree with you there, John.
Hey, Jorge Soler's had a pretty solid year.
Yeah, but I mean,
after throwing punches,
what's Eddie Rosario doing? You know, like I feel like that's what the more likely outcome is there, just looking at history. But I would say that. But it depends what you're giving up, because if you don't want to give up like a J.R. Richie or a Didier Fuentes to go get a Byron Buxton, especially with the issue of maybe having more pitchers. You don't want to get into some of your top prospects. Maybe like an Eric Hartman could be on the move, but I think the Braves just need to go and look in the pitching direction rather than hitting, because I've been hitting really well this year.
John, when you get your royalty for 680 the Fan for their 680 winning percentage, I'll happily be reminding you that you called into our show to let them know about that, and you can carve your name on the Dom Smith statue as long as it's him rounding third. I feel like that is what the statue needs to be. Appreciate the call, John. Again, a very, very loyal listener, one that calls in, gives his thoughts, and what better way to do so with Jacob not in the studio asking questions about the Braves. An update, though, from Oxford, Alabama, Chocolaco Park, scoreless through four between the Huskies and the Tigers. And so looking for a run, a pitcher's duel. They've talked about both teams having multiple runners in scoring position with less than one out, but being able to pitch your way out of it, a couple of unsuccessful bunts in there along with it that don't necessarily bring a whole lot of happiness. Auburn fans feel that as well, with runners on first and second, nobody out, not being able to get the bunt down. But what a perfect segue from the MLB to the SEC tournament in Hoover. Is there any similarities between that? Oh, wait. Automated balls and strikes, one that has brought up a whole lot of frustration and made the jokes in hour number two to introduce the hour on. Everybody loves it until it kind of screws over your team. And my goodness, Auburn just wants to get a single challenge in their favor. They were 0-for last night. And the ninth inning was, you feel like, a major reason of why things were a little bit frustrated twice. Auburn struck out the final out of the game. And then a little tap of the helmet somehow continues the baseball game.
Which, credit for LSU, I think that's exactly what they need to be doing. Is I don't care if the ball legitimately goes directly down the plate. If you have a challenge in your pocket with two outs and that's going to be in the game, tap the helmet. Worst that could happen is, well, wait, it actually is a ball?
Yeah.
Okay, bet. I just look at it where both, especially the second one, that's a strike. Like, I get it. I get it's not in the zone, you know, and especially with a different zone, according to Jacob Rudner on X, formerly known as Twitter. Christian sent me this earlier today. The bottom boundary of the zone in the SEC tournament is set at 23% of the batter's standing height, which was measured in pre-tournament certification process. That's 4% lower than the MLB, and it also extends 4% higher than an MLB strike zone. So it's a bigger zone than what they are used to. And when I look at that game last
meaning week, balls in the corners and balls at the top and the bottom of the zone that are called strikes in this tournament. You heard it from Brad Law in hour number one. Pitches that are being called strikes are not strikes. And you're seeing a perfect example because of, for some reason, the precedent of these are college kids with metal bats. Let's make the zone a little bit bigger to where half the time you know the zone and half the time you don't.
It just doesn't make any sense. You were saying it last night on Twitter. Shameless plug for your Twitter right there. Isn't it C_Griffo3, I think?
If it is, it's 0-1. I don't.
Oh.
Okay. Something like that.
Something like that, yeah. But anyway, shameless plug. It changed what the umpire was calling.
Yeah.
Looking at that bottom of the zone, he was so worried that it was going to be another tap of the helmet and it's overturned, that they are willing to call everything or call nothing. And it just that takes away from the idea of what ABS was supposed to be doing, of changing those borderline calls to changing the zone as a whole.
And I understand the – if I was him, it's much easier for me to say behind a microphone rather than standing in front of 14,000-plus at Hoover of, okay, this is the third time this inning that a pitch of mine that I called one way was challenged and I was wrong, and all three were relatively in the same exact spot. Maybe I need to change something. And there were a lot of conversations and a lot of really good points made by the entire world of social media talking about how this is going to expose a lot of umpires and their zone and the changes that need to be made. But we talk about it from our perspective of how much we don't like it. Imagine how little the umpires like it.
No.
After they have learned what their strike zone is the entire time, now all of a sudden in this random tournament, oh yeah, by the way, now we're going to be able to fact check you. And I understand the bullet points of the counter argument of that is, okay, well, maybe strikes need to be strikes, and I don't completely disagree with that, but man, just the human element of it has been a little bit frustrating, because again, the one that I go back to was the Sanders slider to Curiel on the 3-2 count that ABS said missed 4 inches outside the zone. There is no way that that missed 4 inches outside the zone. There's also been a lot of people talking about ABS and how it measures the middle of the plate, not where it crosses the plate, not the front of the plate, the very middle of the plate, which is a lot of what off-speed pitches are considered strikes, of where it crosses the plate or where it hits the plate. And so now you're at the point of, okay, does this have to be a strike for over half of the plate, over half the corner, over the entire plate? I mean, there's so much gray area that continues to be exposed, and I don't think it's what you're wanting. And again, Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network getting his thoughts on that in hour number one. We understand that this is not going to be just a flawless system, but if that's the case, why are you starting it in a tournament like this that's already so log-jammed? You have to play so many games, so many really, really good teams. Why couldn't these exact percentages start in double A, start in high A, start whenever you want it to, rather than in a tournament like this that has so much riding on it?
Especially with the weather.
Yes.
Like the potential where we were talking yesterday of, man, if it gets to, if we're having to miss 1, 2, potentially even 3 days due to weather, is it worth even continuing the tournament? Those, even the seconds that you're challenging add up. And that is just, maybe I wouldn't do that. Maybe you could say, all right, for certain select non-conference home games, we're going to try ABS. For certain, you know, weekend series in the SEC, we try that. That makes a little bit more sense if, you know, you're with lower stakes, but with teams, especially teams on that cut line of hosting regionals, you can make the argument Auburn's on that cut line. I wouldn't make that argument because I think they should be a top 8 seed regardless of what happens. But you saw it last night where there was two batters that Auburn thought that they had won the game. You look at Jackson Sanders walking off the mound, a tap of the helmet, he's got to go back on. We were talking earlier, to me that's akin to like a third down in a tie ball game, and you get the stop you need, you're going to get the ball to try and get a shot, or you get a fumble and you run it all the way back for a touchdown. The crowd's going nuts, and well, we're going to go to review, and the knee was actually down. You got to go back out there for another play, and it just kills that momentum for a pitching staff and for a defense where it's giving that team second life and letting them hang around. That almost cost Auburn with the tying run or the go-ahead run at the plate to end the game.
It's a really good point you mentioned, too. Not only the physical, but the emotional side of it as well, the drama that's in it, because this isn't something that's just, I'm going to tap my head, nope, it's a ball. Everybody turns, everybody watches, and it's, oh, or the boos on the other side of things. But, there's 5 or 10 seconds that go by that just build the drama, and it is. It's an emotional shockwave, especially after Auburn thought they won the game twice. I go back and think of Auburn football this past season, and as painful as that may be for those listening, think about the Oklahoma game, where Auburn had a scoop and score on the first drive of the game, going up 7-0, all of a sudden they let the play out, but then they go back and review it and say that somehow was taken away from Auburn, believe it or not. But then Oklahoma goes down and kicks a field goal. It's a 10-point swing. You talk about the emotional change on that side of things. Not as drastic, but again, still relatively comparable into what Auburn had to go through. But credit to this Auburn team for overcoming the adversity that they were challenged with, not only with a really good LSU team, a desperate LSU team, but with the ABS, with the automated balls and strikes that's being put into the tournament. Man, you're seeing a whole lot of challenges. And our good buddy Jack Hutton said it a couple of days ago. It's funny that the players may know the strike zone better than the umpires, but now with all of the percentages, all of the changes, what even is a strike? We don't know what the strike zone is. And there's our rant for automated balls and strikes here this afternoon.
Yeah, I mean, I tweeted it last night. At Trip Upton, I believe. I think it's Trip and Upton or something. It doesn't matter. Again, trying to just plug that stuff. If any team was going to go into Hoover, and I know we got to get the break, but if any team was going to go into Hoover and have a game rely or hinge on certain ABS calls, it was always going to be Auburn. But good job by Jackson Sanders and this team fighting through. I'm sure that the certain people within the athletic department already were deleting their petitions and letters to Birmingham about that if that had happened.
Yeah, no way that anybody watching that game got nervous about the possibilities of LSU hitting a three-run home or anything like that. But credit to this Auburn team for handling adversity. They will move on to playing Texas A&M tomorrow night. As it stands right now, again, the games today got moved up, and so you could possibly see that tomorrow with weather. Again, a little bit of a built-in day on that side of things, and so everybody will keep you updated. The Auburn Sports Network will as well. But we're going to take a break, come back, and give a brief little preview of what we're going to see with Texas A&M tonight. Recap what you saw from them in the regular season. Also, might take a quick little peek at some updated regional projections. Where is Auburn set to play according to a couple of sites, and who is Auburn set to play in the regional, and who would they be matched up with in the super regional as well? All of that before we get to Chris Gordy. We're off and rolling here in hour number two on the Thursday edition of On the Line.
This is Ian Fitzsimmons from ESPN Radio, and you're listening to On the Line with Jacob Goins on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
We are back here on the Thursday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. Auburn High takes a 1-0 lead over Hewitt Trustville in the top half of the fifth inning. A leadoff walk for Auburn in the home half has a Husky on base, and so they're trying to work out of a jam. 9 outs the Tigers need to get to take game one. A reminder, only one game this afternoon. It'll be 2 if needed tomorrow at Jacksonville State. But, again, 96-3 W. Lee, Jack Hutton, Jacob Goins over on the call on that side of things. But Trip Upton, Christian Griffin here with you in the studio, taking you through all of the show here this afternoon, tomorrow, and throughout next week as well. And so should be a lot of fun. We're looking forward to it as well. And while we have just a few minutes, wanted to take a look at, again, this Texas A&M team, recap kind of the three-game set against the Aggies. And we got to talk a little bit about this with Brad Law a few moments ago in hour number one. But after Auburn takes the first two games, A&M able to steal game three, get back game three, but Auburn with the run rule victory in game one. I'm very interested to see what this A&M mindset is. And again, they've already announced their starters and what they're planning on doing, but interesting to see if Auburn's bats can get back to life, because every single time Auburn struggled in game one of a three-game series, they bounce back and score a lot of runs, and it usually doesn't happen with a day in between, but maybe that's the way that Auburn can take this Hoover tournament. You get the Friday game that you were able to win. Now you work your way to a quote-unquote Saturday where hopefully Auburn's bats are able to come to life and go and win it.
Yeah, I mean, looking at that series, Auburn, you know, run rules game one and then takes, you know, they take the first two, but both of those games are close games. I believe, what did Brad say, one-run games?
Yeah, Auburn avoided a double play, or Auburn was able to get one in game two, and then they bounced into one to end it in game three.
So, I mean, looking at that, Auburn, a run here, run there away from sweeping, but a run here and run there away from losing the series. I think that this is a Texas A&M team that I don't think Auburn can just look to their regular season success and just, okay, we can duplicate that. I mean, obviously you'd want to duplicate the game one success, but looking at that, I just think that Auburn is going to be a close one for sure, and they've just got to come out and pitch like they did last night and hit better. I mean, I know that's pretty simple, but I think that that's what Butch Thompson is telling these guys to get ready for tomorrow night.
It's a really, really simple game when you think about it. Just hit the ball better, score more runs. I mean,
hit your shots.
It really is just a really simple game when you think about it. Auburn and Texas A&M tomorrow evening, tomorrow night, depending on, again, as of now, but we know how rock solid that is. And Auburn right now, according to D1 Baseball, according to a couple other sites, anywhere from the 6th to the 7th seed. And so make the jokes on that side of things. But we'll take a break. Come back. Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, is going to join us. We'll get his thoughts from Hoover and what the heck is going on in Baton Rouge.
We're halfway through hour number two. You've got 30 more minutes of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. He is Tripp Upton. I'm Christian Griffin here with you in the studio. No Jacob Goins tied. Actually, Auburn with a 1-0 lead, home half of the fifth, but runners on first and second for Hewitt Trustful. We'll continue to give you updates on that side of things, as well as updates going on in Hoover as Florida and Alabama are just underway in the top half of the first inning. And what better time to bring on a man that knows it better than anybody? Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, joins us as he does every single Thursday at 3:30. Chris, we appreciate your time. Hope all is going well in your world. I know you have a whole lot to cover in terms of SEC baseball going on right now.
Yeah, man, it's been a lot of fun. Baseball's been a lot of fun. Luckily, the weather has mostly cooperated so far, but got a little hairy there last night. I thought Auburn, LSU got a couple runners on. I was like, oh, man, don't blow this now, Auburn. But luckily, they were able to get the win.
Yeah, thankfully, nobody in Auburn was worried whatsoever. Nobody has seen this story be told throughout multiple different sports. And so everybody was extremely confident, and they have been, and rightfully so this year with Jackson Sanders on the mound. But a perfect segue, I guess, in terms of the ABS, in terms of are you a fan? I don't know if we've talked about this before. It was announced for the SEC tournament. Are you a fan of the ABS in general when you're looking at, I guess, the MLB side of things before we dive into college?
Yeah, I'm fine with it. I mean, I think the biggest plus with it has been they've been able to do it quick. You know, I think that's the reality of it. What nobody wants is this thing to draw out and, you know, add an extra 20 minutes on the games and all that. yeah, so, I mean, baseball has done a pretty good job of incorporating it pretty well, and you know, MLB games are, gosh, I mean, this season I think they're averaging about two hours 20 minutes on average. I mean, so it's trimmed a lot of time off in with the pitch clock, but I think challenging the balls and strikes, I mean, they're pretty seamless with it, man. It takes an extra 10, 15 seconds sometimes.
And then in terms of, again, college baseball and the SEC implementing it for Hoover, are you a fan of the timing? Do you like it being implemented in a competition like this? Were you more of a fan of it possibly starting to start next year? And again, I know there's some details that have to work its way throughout all of college baseball to try and get it permanently implemented. But your thoughts of it being in the SEC tournament and how it's been so far?
Yeah, I think it's kind of an easy way to kind of, for everybody to kind of dip their toe in the water and try it. And I think, I mean, we've had a lot of them. It's luckily, again, with this, it seems like they've gone mostly pretty quick, not as quick as MLB has done it. But, you know, it's all about getting the call right. And that's what's most frustrating. I mean, when I talk to SEC baseball fans across the country, the one thing that they are so frustrated with is the inconsistency behind home plate most nights. You know, where it's like, man, you've been calling that a strike all night, and then suddenly it's not. I think that's, you just want them to get the call right, and yeah, that's kind of what happened last night. Some of them get wrapped up in the emotion of a big moment, a big pitch, and they're so quick to go, strike three! And then you go back and go, no, it was actually a ball. And that's kind of what happened with walking the leadoff man there for LSU last night in the ninth inning. But yeah, I mean, again, at the end of the day, you just want to get the call right. But for fans' sake, the people that are there watching, make this as quick as possible.
Right. And it's funny, the polarizing opinions of Auburn fans having a full day of watching the ABS and realizing, okay, maybe this isn't such a bad thing, and then Auburn goes 0-for in the tournament. Every single call that they challenged or LSU challenged went in favor of the Tigers, and funny how the opinions sometimes change on that side of things. And we'd made the joke about how Auburn has the greatest opportunity ever. Have you seen the social media graphics going around with Ole Miss saying that they're the first team ever to challenge, and then Mississippi State responding of the first team in the state of Mississippi? And I mean, Auburn should post the graphic of the first team to be on the wrong side of every single challenge in a college baseball game.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I mean, it's, you know, we're all making history in some way, but yeah, it's been funny. And again, I mean, I would love to see this. Hopefully they've taken a positives away from this, that this could be implemented for you know, for the entire season next year. Now, that may be a little bit harder. Maybe they'll just say it'll only be for, you know, conference games.
Sure.
That's when you have the most resources and all. But, man, I'd love to see it for every game.
We're talking with Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC. And to more pan a little bit out, but still looking at Hoover as we are underway, you know, the quarterfinals, Georgia already punching their ticket to that last four. A lot of teams in Hoover, people say that Auburn is one of them, but I think a lot of people around here would disagree that they are fighting to either be a national seed or a regional host. Just talk about what the tournament has meant so far, and as we get into that this last stretch of teams trying to lock up either regional bids or national seed bids.
Yeah, I think it's a little scary for Kentucky because I thought they needed to win at least a game at Hoover, and they went 0-for. So I'm curious to see. I've heard a couple people say they're kind of on the bubble. So we'll see what ends up happening with them. I think D1 Baseball had them as the, you know, that group of last four in. I think they have them as the number 62 team. So they're playing with fire a little bit. You know, Vanderbilt, they listed as a team to watch, but with them getting eliminated by Florida yesterday, I think they're out. So, you know, I think there's a chance here the SEC gets 12 teams in, and obviously I think, you know, what's still on the line is potential, you know, hosting and potentially being a top eight seed. And I think that's what Auburn is certainly still kind of going for here. I think they're still very much in that conversation to be a top eight seed. You know, I think Georgia and Texas are locks. I think A&M is most likely going to be one. And then, you know, are there any other teams that can make some noise to do it? I think tonight's game between Auburn and A&M will be very interesting, and see how when the bracket comes out, is this game had an influence on, you know, a decision either way.
Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, joining us as he does every single Thursday at 3:30. And again, we appreciate your time and for being a part of our program for as long as you have. Before diving into, man, a whole lot of the LSU conversations, anything in terms of spring notes with football or the down period? I know there's a lot of big time recruiting weekends. What all are you talking on the college football side of things on the Locked On SEC podcast?
Well, today's show, I'm in Houston, and Steve Sarkisian spoke at the Touchdown Club here.
Okay.
And had some very interesting things to say. So we're going to have that on tomorrow's Lockdown SEC. Everything from Sark talking about, you know, his opinion on the going to a 2014 playoff, to kind of clarifying his basket weaving comments against Ole Miss last week. And then he put his foot in his mouth again today and took a shot at Texas Tech. He didn't say their name, but he said there's a team in this state that plays a schedule that if we play our second and third stringers, we'd go undefeated if we played their schedule.
Wow.
So, yeah, Sark just can't stop taking some shots. But it was good to hear from him. Like I said, we'll have that on tomorrow's Locked On SEC. But yesterday's Locked On SEC, for anybody who missed it, Auburn starting center Cole Best joined us for the whole show. And a really, really tremendous young man that I'm excited to see what he does. He's part of that, you know, dozen trio of guys that came over from USF with Alex Golish. And for any Auburn fans who haven't heard him yet, I mean, what a tremendous young man that's just going to be a leader for this team. And
that's awesome.
Speaks glowingly about Byron Brown and all the different pieces that this Auburn team has. And certainly would get you excited. You can check it out, Locked On SEC.
Chris, I have to ask what not the basketball side of things down in Baton Rouge, but the football with Lane Kiffin bringing back Ed Ogeron. I feel like I've seen on social media every single LSU fan, maybe outside of the crawfish in the water, because you know Coach O likes his Cajun food, are excited about him coming back to Baton Rouge and helping out Lane Kiffin. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's just a smart play. I mean, you know, from a standpoint of one of LSU's top recruiters in recent years, mm-hmm. with Frank Wilson, who was the running backs coach. That was one of the guys that Brian Kelly made a point to keep because he knows the state so well. And he left, you know, when they hired Lane Kiffin, he went and joined Pete Golding's staff over at Ole Miss. And, you know, when you talk about recruiting, look at what's been happening the last couple of weeks, guys. A&M is crushing it. They already have 14 commits. Oklahoma's got 20. Florida's been crushing it. All three of those teams are in the top five in recruiting. You know who's not up there? LSU. And Alabama's not up there either. I'll throw them in there as well. But LSU ranks 44th right now in recruiting. Lane Kiffin knows he's got to, you know, focus big time on recruiting at LSU, but he's also got to worry about, you know, getting his staff together, putting together offensive game plans, mm-hmm. dealing with all of his portal guys and all this. So this just takes one of the big things off his plate. Hey, Coach O, you're a hell of a recruiter. You know the state. Go recruit for me. And so I think it's a tremendous move. And, you know, somebody explained it, you know, they're like, look, Coach O was a tremendous recruiter in the pre-NIL world.
Yeah.
Now he gets to go sit on mom and dad's couch and actually talk dollars and cents. Yeah, this is a big win for Lane Kiffin and LSU. We'll see how it pans out. But it is weird, guys, when you consider LSU's brought back Will Wade, who they fired as the head basketball coach, Johnny Jones, who's an assistant basketball coach, and now Ed Ogeron, who was – you know, one of their last fired football coaches.
Yeah.
With Paul Maneri getting fired by South Carolina, I think Jay Johnson ought to bring him in and add him to the baseball team. Why not?
Hey, I mean, space makes the heart grow fonder, time, distance, all of those. Just bringing back those. And, I mean, if the biggest complaint of Lane Kiffin is bringing back a national championship-winning head coach, I feel like that's a pretty good complaint to have. And then you mentioned the recruiting and the crawfish eating as well. I mean, seems like a big-time win for those down in the Bayou, but you mentioned it. Will Wade in there as well, doing what Will Wade does. Wanted your a professional opinion on this side of things in terms of, man, it feels very polarizing. We've heard a lot of naysayers, a lot of disagreeers. The people that are approving of this are a little bit quieter. Your thoughts on everything that's going on with Will Wade on the LSU hardwood of bringing back professionals, something that, man, you feel like the NCAA tried to nip in the bud with the Bediako situation. Does this feel any different, or is this just Will Wade saying, okay, NCAA, you got it one time, now try and tell me no?
Yeah, I mean, from one standpoint, I hate it. I mean, I think it's silly, but, you know, you can't help but laugh at it. But he's following the rules. I mean, this is within the realm of what you're allowed to do, and I think one or two of these guys is going to have to fight for a waiver on, but I mean, to me, guys, it'll be friggin' hilarious if he sends out a whole team of 22- and 23-year-old semi-professional, you know, international players out there. Like, yeah. I can't wait to hear the PA guy at LSU try to have to pronounce all these guys' last names. But it's, you know, somebody says he's making a mockery of it. And I would say, yeah, and why not? I mean, this sends a message loud and clear to the NCAA. Guys, you need to wrangle this thing in.
Yeah.
You need to institute two rules. One, anybody who's ever played in the G League, been considered for the draft, and went and played quote-unquote professional ball is not allowed to come back to college, period, end of sentence. And then two, any international guys who have played, you know, professional basketball, and that means getting paid to play basketball,
right?
I just don't think you should be allowed to go back to college. And then on top of it, let's put a cap on the age. If you're 21 or older and you're international player and you've never come over and played in the States, I'm sorry, you don't get to go back and play college ball. You can go to college, you just can't play amateur basketball. It's just, it's a mockery. So, yes, is Will Wade making a mockery of it? Yes. But, again, until the NCAA steps in and does something, it's just going to keep happening.
Yeah, I saw a graphic by Field of 68 yesterday where their entire projected starting five is not currently eligible. And their average age is, I want to say, like 22, 23. That's older than I am.
Hey, I heard Chad Baker Mazzara needs a place to go. So maybe Will Wade can just bring him back as well into the SEC.
Yeah, I mean, there's tons of guys out there we can bring back, you know, that have been great former SEC stars. I'd love to see that. But, you know, I mean, Kentucky, can you imagine the number of guys they could bring back of – you know, guys who played at Kentucky for 1 year and still have college eligibility. But no, I think the NCAA's got to do something here very soon. We're talking about with football, right? Instituting a 5 years,
yeah,
you get 5 years to play five seasons, and that's it. And then also instituting an age restriction. I mean, it applies to basketball as well.
It's been kind of the question of the week that we've asked a couple of our guests, and wanted to throw it out there for you as well, and maybe putting you a little bit on the spot. But just in terms of the NCAA and the decision that they made with Charlie Baker and the Bediako saying this is a win for college sports, it's a win for high school athletes and college athletes not losing their spot to professionals or semi-professionals. Is this something that could be the start of the end in terms of the NCAA? We know that this is something that you feel like only has a matter of time, and we gave them a round of applause in terms of the Bediako situation. If they go back and they step on their own toes of what they've made with rulings, is this going to be the beginning of the end in terms of the NCAA?
I mean, it already feels that way. I mean, one of the big topics earlier this week was the, you know, gaining traction that the SEC and Big Ten could break away from the NCAA.
Yeah.
So, I mean, all that is on the table. I just think, you know, and Sark said it today, it is rambling today, that, you know, guys, we all are members of the NCAA, and they instituted rules, but we don't follow the rules. It's like, you know, anytime we want to bend the rule or say, yeah, we don't like that decision, we're going to go to a local judge and get him to overrule you. I mean, it's a great point in that every problem we've had in college athletics the last few years is because we didn't enforce the rule because we didn't like the rule. But then again, we all signed up and agreed to these rules.
Yeah.
So it's something's got to be done. I mean, look, every Ole Miss fan will tell you that they're looking forward to like crazy to see Trinidad Chambliss out there. But at the end of the day, Chambliss shouldn't be playing another year. He exhausted his eligibility. He should be done. He should be in the NFL right now. So, again, until schools stop fighting this and fighting for their guys for extra eligibility and all this, just follow the rules, and I think we'd be much better.
Chris, tell me that you've never had extreme, really bad tonsillitis without telling me that you haven't had extremely bad tonsillitis. I mean, Trinidad's just lucky to be on the football field in general. And so maybe three or four more years, if that's what he wants to get, then he should just be able to get that. Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, with us here on the phone lines. We appreciate, again, your time as well, going on with Hoover. So much going on right now. Spring topics going on the football side of things, the basketball side of things. We've hit a couple of them, talking about on yesterday's show and then what's coming up on tomorrow's show. Tell everybody once again where they need to go to keep up with all of your action, all of your content as we continue to near our way towards SEC Media Days.
Yeah, like I said, Locked On SEC, wherever you get your podcasts. And again, for any Auburn fans out there, go check out our interview with Cole Best, about 30 minutes of talking all things the off season with the Auburn Tigers, and everything from Byron Brown to Cole Skinner on the offensive line. One of the funniest tidbits we had with him was talking about the rematch against Brendan Bett at Florida. Brendan Bett spit on Cole Skinner at USF in that famous game where they upset the Gators. Guess what? He comes to the plains of Auburn this season in week three. So going to be a heck of a rematch between those guys.
Chris, we appreciate your time. On the way out, who wins it in Hoover this weekend?
Oh, gosh. Georgia's loaded, man. I don't see Georgia losing, but we'll see.
I mean, again, I don't. At the point of once you get to the semifinals, the championship, I'm not sure that any seed lines are going to be moved. It's just playing for pride at that point. Chris, we appreciate your time. We look forward to talking to you again next week.
Thanks, guys. Yeah, just don't let Texas win, please. We don't need them winning anything.
Yes, I won't say that I disagree on that side of things. Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, with us on the phone lines. And look at that, no Auburn jab on the way out, a Texas jab on the way out. Man, you can't have complaints on that side of things. And yeah, I was able to watch a little bit of that interview with Mr. Best, and it was really, really impressive to hear his mindset and see what his excitement level is for this Auburn team coming up in the fall inside Jordan-Hare Stadium. We're going to take a break, come back, quickly wrap up the show, give you our final updates from Hoover, our final updates from Oxford in there, as well as we wrap up the Thursday edition of On the Line right after this.
War Eagle, this is Auburn baseball coach Butch Thompson, and you're on the line in Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Come on. Wrapping up the show here on ESPN 106.7. Trip Upton and Christian Griffin here with you in the studio. And we appreciate everybody for being here with us, whether it's been for the full 2 hours, for hour number one, for hour number two, or even just on the segment on the way out of here. We appreciate you and for making us a part of your Thursday afternoon. A look towards Chocolaco Park. Hewitt Trustville scores two in the home half of the sixth. And so 2-1. Our apologies, that was the home half of the fifth, then the home half of the sixth. Now, Hewitt with a 2-1 lead with runners on first and second. So Auburn needs three outs and then at least one more run to send it to extras, or I guess it would need one more run and then three more outs to get into extras. But game one going on right now over on 96.3 WLEE, 963WLEE.com and the Radio Alabama app. So as soon as we are out of here, flip over there. Listen to Jack Hutton, Jacob Goins call game one, a reminder game two, and the if game three at Jacksonville State tomorrow afternoon. And so hopefully we'll listen to Auburn High pull off a comeback and take it in game one. But a fantastic show here this afternoon. A big thank you once again to Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network, who we got to talk to in hour number one. Boots on the ground in Hoover, got to recap game one, the win over LSU, the pros, the cons of ABS and everything going on in Hoover. And as well, Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, getting his full thoughts out there in terms of baseball, in terms of basketball, in terms of LSU football, everything in the wild world of college athletics. Host of the Locked On SEC podcast, Chris Gordy has it covered on that side of things. Trip tomorrow, Free For All Friday. I know we have a little bit of a football conversation. Again, talking season right here upon us. Should be a lot of fun and a deep dive into Texas A&M and Auburn coming up tomorrow night as well.
I am excited, and I hope you're excited listening at home in your car, wherever you are, but make sure to stay tuned into that tomorrow because it's going to be an absolute show.
2-4 right here on ESPN 106.7. We're back. Trip Upton for Jacob Goins. I'm Christian Griffin. Stay safe. We'll talk to you later.